Do you want to get set up and ready to see private clients this summer or even before that? If so, we're offering our free private practice bootcamp this April 22nd through 25th that you're not going to want to miss. Seeing a few private clients is a great way to earn some extra money and dip your toe into the private practice waters. In just 3 days, we will help you make a plan, no matter whether you want to work with kids or adults, offer services in person or via teletherapy, or both. By the end of bootcamp, you will have a plan that you're excited about and know the steps to get started. Oh, and there are daily giveaways for some of my most popular resources, like the private practice clinic forms. To sign up, just head on over to planyourprivatepractice.com right now. After the free 3-day event, we will open enrollment for the spring cohort of the Start Your Private Practice program. Bootcampers will have an opportunity to get some amazing extra bonuses if they enroll during bootcamp. So if you've been meaning to join but haven't, now is the best time to join, and you'll be able to get set up and ready to treat private clients this summer. So head on over to planyourprivatepractice.com right now to sign up, and I'll see you in bootcamp. Now, on to the episode.
Jennifer Corey is a speech-language pathologist who started a private practice in 2021 after working in several settings and getting her PhD. I got to know Jennifer during her time in the Start Your Private Practice program. In this episode, she talks about how she sees clients virtually, how clients find her, her specialties, and why private practice has been great for her as a neurodiverse person. If you've been thinking about starting a private practice, particularly if you are neurodiverse, this is a must-listen episode, so stay tuned. I'm Jenna Castro-Casbon, speech-language pathologist, business coach, and creator of the Start Your Private Practice system. And I'm on a mission to turn stuck SLPs into successful private practitioners. If you're tired of dealing with high productivity requirements, high caseload sizes, and low pay, it's time to take control of your professional, personal, and financial life and finally get the freedom, flexibility, and financial abundance that you deserve by working with private clients in your own practice. Join me here each week as I share tips, best practices, and inspirational interviews on the Private Practice Success Stories podcast. If you're a private practitioner or one in the making, you're in the right place, so let's get started. All right, so before we dive in, can you share your name, your location, and the name of your private practice?
Yes, I'm Jennifer Corey. I'm in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and my practice is Iceberg Therapy Services.
So I am so excited to do this because I love to share, you know, stories of all kinds of different private practitioners and people who've had different paths and all kinds of different stuff. And you're in Baton Rouge. I'm from New Orleans, which is about an hour from Baton Rouge. So I always love meeting other Louisiana people. But what I would love to do is, could you take us back to the beginning of your career and also share, when did you start thinking about private practice?
I would say, and yeah, I did not take the most traditional career path or kind of straightforward route, which is kind of my theme, but I did my undergraduate degree, my master's both in speech pathology. And that was probably even during the undergraduate time that I heard like, oh, SLPs can do private practice. That sounds like a cool setting. And it was just kind of like an idea planted there and took me much, much longer to get back to that. But let's see. So after I did the master's program, I decided I was going to go right into a PhD program. And I was again hearing, oh, there's a shortage of PhD faculty in our field. So there's a need. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, I'm a nerd and I can embrace that and like do academia and research sounds interesting. So maybe I can contribute something there because like clinically I had some struggles and things and like definitely like hit my confidence on it. So I did the PhD program, finished that. And then I took a job, a faculty job in South Mississippi, did that. And I was there for 7 years. Oh, and the funny part was like while I was there, I did my CF, like while on the side of working as a faculty person, got my C's. So I did all backwards. And then I started like on top, you know, we also supervised some students in the university clinic and do some PRN work like a little bit here and there. So I'm, you know, getting more clinical experience. I was doing that in nursing homes. So then like 2015. After that, I moved back to Baton Rouge, Louisiana with my husband had a job in Baton Rouge here, and we had our first kid. We wanted to be closer to family and be where his job was, et cetera. So, and I said, academia was good and bad for me. You know, like I did do like adjunct courses later, but I was like, I'm going to leave that full-time academia thing and do full-time clinical work and see how that goes. And like, my thought was ultimately move to a private practice, but I needed some more experience, ironically, you know, at that point.
Yeah. So that's good. So that's like, it's interesting how, you know, you kind of like went more of the academic route, but then you were still kind of picking up some PRN work and whatever else. And so probably you also might, at that time, were you thinking at all about like seeing a couple of private clients or not quite yet?
Not yet. And I definitely hadn't thought of the idea of, you know, till I learned from your, I guess, program and the podcast about doing it on the side and, you know, different options there are. I was thinking like, okay, that's a, you know, the typical brick and mortar thing. I can't do that right now. But yeah, I just thought about it. Like me and my husband talked about how that might be a good thing. Ultimately, like has good flexibility. But we moved back. I started working, just, you know, took a job in the schools that was temporary. That was like a good learning experience. So I was like, okay, not the setting for me, but good things. And then, so I moved to a job at a hospital outpatient kind of work. So all this like was, you know, I went through several jobs kind of figuring out like what was a good setting and population that worked for me and like kind of narrowing down more, even though, you know, I had an interest in autism all along. That was where my dissertation was and all that. At the outpatient job, that was very general. Like I was seeing all ages. So I'd have like, you know, toddler who's late talking, then like an artic kid and then like a dysphagia client. And I felt overwhelmed by that because I didn't feel like I could learn all the things and be effective, you know, didn't feel good about that. And I had like, you know, figured out what I like to do the most. And so I moved from that job to a pediatric clinic so I could do more like work with autistic kids. And that just was, yeah, that was a good experience and good for getting towards my niche that I do now. But also seeing like, it was a high stimulation kind of environment, like a lot of noise, like people all the time. You're in a gym with like lots of kids, lots of therapists. Definitely not working for me there. Like that was where I really hit burnout hard. Like, you know, in 30-minute sessions with kids like all day long, I can't maintain that kind of caseload or anything.
You know, you bring up a really good point that I'm sure some of the listeners really identify, which is just about the environment, right? Sometimes we get ourselves working in environments that for whatever reason just aren't conducive to our personalities or our interests or, you know, our sensory systems or whatever, right? Like I used to work at a rehab hospital and I did acute care for a while. And I found it exhausting literally running around the hospital looking for people. Like previously, I had worked in outpatient and people just came to me and that was nice. And all of a sudden I was running around the hospital like a, you know, chicken with my head cut off trying to like to find people. And I had to interact with a ton of different people. And like, I just wasn't, my personality didn't really like it, right? So I think it's important to kind of recognize that. And I always thought that acute care would be like, you know, the best or something. And then I got to it and was like, ooh, I actually don't even like this.
Right. Not the best for you. Yeah, exactly. Like I was like, I'm neurodivergent and I'm an introvert and like I can't do, people interacting with people all day, every day, or, you know, all the noise and things and focus on my work. You know, writing notes while there's a kid running around or that kind of thing. So, yeah. So I left that job after just a year with the burnout and all to do another work at a private clinic. And that was good in that, like, I got to focus on the population I liked most. And I got to decide what kind of clients I would see there and, like, had more flexibility there and, like, a nicer environment. So I was, like, pretty, you know, I was still thinking about private practice, but kind of like, okay, this is good. I'm just going to like coast here. And then COVID happened. So I feel like a lot of people that was like their, starter. That definitely was for me because I took a big income hit with COVID. And I was like, okay, I definitely have to do something different. And it also gave me like time because I was like at home. It was hard to get clients to switch to virtual and give that a try amidst all that was like happening, you know? So I was like, okay, I can reflect on like me, myself, what's working, what's not. I did like some continuing education things and like, and I think that's when I got the START program and started going through that and just, doing the ducks in a row thing.
Well, I think too that COVID still, right? I think we're still evaluating what do we like and don't like, right? But
yes,
but certainly that early period, I mean, there was some just like real immediate things, right? Like people were either laid off or people weren't working as much, mm-hmm. or, you know, there was that part. But then the second part really is that it forced us to reevaluate what was working or not working about our lives and our environments and our schedules, mm-hmm. right? And so I think some people, even though obviously COVID was awful and there was a lot of sadness and a lot of loss and a lot of disruption, in some ways, I think it could have been a gift in, like, again, in some ways, not a lot of ways, but
silver lining.
Thank you. That's what I meant to say. A silver lining was getting people to get into environments that served them. Right. And I know that the thing of COVID, I personally, as a business owner, you know, who teaches people to start practices, I was like, oh, here we go. Who's going to want to do this? You know, nobody's going to join my programs. Like, there goes my business. And the opposite happened. Yeah. Right. So many people decided, oh, my gosh, now's the time to start a private practice, either because what the heck? If not now, when?
To lose now.
Do it. Or because they needed the money. Right. And now the same thing is kind of happening with like talk of recession and whatever else. Like, our enrollments are picking up because people like don't want to leave their financial situation to chance, right? They're like, I want to earn more money. I want to be in control of my finances. And so I started to have that same kind of mental thing, like, oh my gosh, what if enrollment slows down? But like, it's only grown because, again, people want to take control of their finances and earn more money. You know what I mean?
Right. Yes. And I see a lot of my clients who are, I have a lot of autistic adult clients now. And we talk about, like, you know, if your brain works differently in any other way or you need something different, then I think self-employment is great for that, like, make it what you need and want and, you know, yeah.
Hi there, Jenna Castro-Casbon here, and I hope that you're loving the episode so far. Chances are you've been listening to this podcast for a while and soaking up a ton of information from myself and our guests, and it's time to make the shift from dreaming to doing and go from inspiration to implementation. Successful private practices don't build themselves. At The Independent Clinician, we help regular SLPs and OTs become successful private practitioners using our proven systems. No more guessing, no more Googling, no more sleepless nights stressing about legalities. We can help you just like we've helped the guests featured on this show. They didn't guess or stress their way through private practice. Instead, they got step-by-step help along the way, and we're excited to help you too. If you need help to get set up and started with private clients on the side, the Start Your Private Practice program is perfect for you. If you've already started and you want to transition into full-time private practice and be successful once you're there, the Grow Your Private Practice program is your next step. To learn more about our programs, go to independentclinician.com. Now back to the episode. Okay, so what happened next?
So I think that was like 2020, and then I started my practice in 2021 of May. So, you know, I talked to my employer and ultimately had to like put in my notice 30 days and then, you know, do the all-in jump to private practice, which, you know, I'd hoped it would be like more gradual, but like, again, I got there. I was really nervous for income and all that. So at first it was very like, you know, do whatever I could do. Like, I did some like early intervention work, you know, state work, and took a part-time job at a school and then saw whatever my clients I could. So I just kind of pieced together income. And I think, yeah, a lot of it was like so anxious about that during the summer, but then things quickly started to pick up, I think, in the fall. Yeah. And then, you know, and then it got to a point like where I was getting more and more interest from prospective like private clients that I was like, okay, I'm holding myself back from growth because like I'm limited by my schedule, you know, with other jobs and things. So like I just gradually like cut the EI clients. Like I could hand those off to someone else. That was good and being like low commitment way to do it. And then like the school job, I cut my hours and then I just stuck it out till the end of the school year and resigned. It was already like very part-time when I started that anyway. So,
well, I love that too. I love, you do have to make a calculation. At some point, you know, I teach people to start seeing clients on the side, right? And for the most part, that works. So it kind of didn't quite work for you. But nonetheless, but then you picked up some other jobs to have that steady income while you were mm-hmm. building your practice. But at some yes. point, listeners, you have to sit down and do the math, right? You have to sit down and say, okay, like, what is my income potential if I go all in on my private practice versus if I'm juggling like my job plus my practice? The reality is that there's just only so many hours that you can do that, right? And
yeah,
you know, there's literally only so many hours. And then if you have a, you know, family or anything else, right? And so sometimes people realize that it's actually costing them money to stay at their job. And so yes, I really right. strongly encourage people to sit down with a calculator and do the math
yes.
and figure it out, right? Because we have so many people who are like in the START program, for example, who decide to go all in on their practice, and they're like making, you know, two or three times the amount of income while working like half the amount of hours or even less the amount of hours. So like, listeners, sit down and yes. do the math. And if I have a cool income calculator, you can DM me for it on Instagram, but please do the math, you guys.
Yeah. At first it was nice to have a reliable source of income with the school job. And then it reached a point where I was like, okay, if I do the math, I'm not coming out ahead, you know, as it is. And plus it was just quality of life things. Like, I'm juggling like different hats of different jobs and different systems and like traveling to clients for different jobs and my private clients. So like, it was about a year after starting the practice that I was, you know, to just strictly full-time with my practice and got my full-time office space and was, you know, shifted to, I only see clients virtually and in the office and no more travel and all that different stuff that was, for me, just too much tax on the executive functioning skills.
What you said was that some of the environments that you were working in were too overstimulating, right? Or just like weren't really mm-hmm. good for you, yeah. right? But now through your practice, right, where you actually have full control over the environment, you have chosen to do an environment that, again, you're in full control of, right? You can have a quiet space. You can have, you know, again, control over probably things exactly. like the lighting or the noise exactly. or whatever that yes, you don't have that control.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Like having this office and getting those controls was like a big, you know, huge thing for me. And I feel happy to like reach the goals of like, you know, I feel like it's rewarding. Like I'm helping people and serving like a big need out there and doing something, but also like I'm making more money with less face-to-face client time because I just can't, you know, maintain doing a lot of that.
I don't know who said it, but it's famous, obviously, that know thyself, right? And I think that it's really important. And I think as people get older, they know themselves better and or they're just less willing to put themselves in positions that aren't conducive to them. And so yes. I see more and more people who do identify as neurodiverse saying, you know what, I can't work this way. I can't work this way in the schools. I can't work this way in the hospital. This is just not conducive for me, for my system. And I'm going to start my own practice. And there's so many people who are truly thriving in private practice because they are in control of the environment. And it sounds like that's what's happening with you.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I learned those things, like working by myself is a good thing. So for me, like I want to stay just, I have a virtual admin assistant now. But other than that, like it's just me and it's good that way.
And you see that too. And sometimes, and listeners, maybe you're in some of these groups or not, but these like kind of like alternative career groups, which are for speech therapists who are like considering yes. leaving the profession. And, you know, a lot of times in those groups, people are kind of beyond the point of wanting to maybe even try private practice because they're like, I'm done. Like, tell me how to be a coder or whatever. But something I see a lot in those groups is people just saying like, you know, I feel weird that I'm an SLP, but I actually don't really like being around people that much. Like, how can I find a new job that allows me to do that? And if they're open to it, I do share that, like, you could just have your own practice and see teletherapy clients and or have a small office and be in charge of that. And again, some people are like, oh, my gosh, great idea. I'll try it. And others are like, no, forget it. I'm totally burned out. I don't want anything to do with it. But listeners, I'd really like to try, if possible, to save more people from leaving this profession, because a lot of people don't really want to leave the profession. They just want to leave their job.
Yes. That definitely makes sense. I see how people get there and how I could have ended up there. But yeah, like the beautiful thing about a profession is like how many options there are and different, you know, ways you can do it so you can find something that works for you. And if you kind of think outside the box and, you know, yes, jump in and all that.
Yes. Okay. I love that. So what would you tell our listeners that your private practice is like these days, right? Like, tell people kind of, again, what is your private practice like if they were to kind of like look in on it?
Yeah. Okay. So I definitely did, like I said, shift, kind of narrow down what services I'm doing and what kind of clients I'm seeing. So what I do now primarily is autism screening and diagnostic assessment. So it kind of, it doesn't, I would say in a way, it looks functionally more like a psychologist because I do a lot of the diagnostics, but primarily that. And then I do some therapy clients and some consulting, like parent coaching kinds of things.
And the thing that I really like about that is you're now doing things that you really like doing, right? These are all things that you...
Exactly.
I mean, if you I kind of guessed that, I guess, but you said that you narrowed, right? So oftentimes when we narrow things, we cut out the stuff that we're like, meh, like I could do this, but I don't really like this. So let me just focus on what I like the most. So I love that you've been able to do that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I hope this doesn't like comes across in the right way. Like I even, you know, I feel like I've got it made because I'm like handpicking what I do in my clients. Even like I have an initial consult and, you know, for the diagnostic clients, and we make sure like we're a good fit for each other. And like, you know, if someone I don't want to work with or they're not a good fit for me to work with, like, then it's not going to get us anywhere. So like, that's the beauty too, of that, like getting to do where you're most effective and should put your resources, which are limited, you know?
Totally. I love that. Where would you say that you get most of your clients from? Like, you know, in terms of marketing or like website or word of mouth, or where do most of your clients find you?
Yeah, that's an interesting, like, I think I was lucky in that there was a big need, so I haven't had to do a lot of marketing. So like a lot of people just Google and find me, or I'm in some directories, you know, for autism diagnosis, and they find me there, or just some word of mouth, like either online or locally.
And really, once people have had like a good experience with you, like listeners, that's how word of mouth happens, right? A lot of people say like, oh, I want word of mouth, or how do I get word of mouth? Well, recognize that word of mouth is earned. It happens when people have a good experience with somebody and they tell other people. So whether it was like your clients who then maybe told their doctor, or maybe you got a referral from a doctor and a client said, or a parent, right, or there was a support group or something, right? Like this is all the ways that people are testimonials on Google reviews and that kind of thing are great ways to help
people. Yeah. As an example, I had, you know, a client's mom I'm grateful to that recommended me for a directory that has been like a big source of referrals because people, you know, use that one to find assessment. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Fantastic. Okay. So looking forward and looking into like this coming year, what would you say are your goals for your private practice in the next like 6 to 12 months?
One of my goals is to like standardize my practice more, like get more organized so that things are like more streamlined, you know, with what I'm doing. That's been like slow going. And I'd like to get into just, I have maybe have like too many, you know, ideas and ambitions and goals of things I'd like to do and get into different things. And then of course, limited by my, you know, ability and time and all that, but or energy, I'd say like, I like to get into doing some presentations, more writing ventures, like writing a book perhaps. And what else? Some more consulting and things. So having some other income streams would be good too.
Oh my gosh. I love that. I love that so much. You know, I think that there's just so many ways that we can help, right? And that we can try to reach more people and also get paid for it too, right? So like, that's one of the reasons why I'm a big fan of consulting and also of presentations, because you never know who's going to be in the audience that then is going to take something that they learn from you and either, you know, be able to help more people, or like maybe it's them who hire you, right, to help as a therapist or a consultant, or maybe that's your new best word of mouth referral source. You know what I mean? So I think all of these are that you mentioned are great options for you. So as we start to kind of wrap up, what would you say to someone who is listening to our interview and is like, oh my gosh, I identify with Jennifer so much. So much of what she says is like me. And I've been thinking about private practice, but I just don't know if I'm cut out for it, if I can do it. What would you say to that person?
I hope to reach that person because I know surely I'm not the only one out there with similar, you know, challenges. And I hope, like, and I was there and facing all the, like, you know, back and forth, like, should I do this or not? So, you know, to that person, I just hope they take that if I can do this, you can too. And, you know, there's ways to figure out what works for you and make it work. So, you know, if you need to work differently or having a different idea in terms of what you want to offer, and, you know, give it a try. And you can do it. And like I said, you can adjust and figure things out as you go, or, you know, learn as you go. Like all the things I said, well, I don't know how to do this for business or that thing. Well, you know, I've had either somebody help me or delegated it or, you know, figured it out on the way.
Like, I think that's great advice, right? I think so many, particularly SLPs and OTs too, get stuck in that analysis paralysis and stuck in like imposter syndrome too, right? Of like, oh, right, I don't know if I can do this, right? But like, we can always try things, and we are also very capable of doing hard things, things outside of our comfort zones. But there's some people who think about private practice for like years and years and years, and then time goes by, they still have the same questions. They still have the same worries and fears and hesitations. At some point, you just got to decide you're going to try it and see what you think, right?
Exactly. And I want to add, like, I think that being neurodivergent like makes you uniquely capable or having like something unique to offer that clients out there really appreciate, you know. I figured that out as well. Like, they're out there like seeking other neurodivergent people to work with, you know.
Because it's important to have that shared experience, right? I think that I totally agree with you. I think it's important to lead with our values and lead with who we are as clinicians, knowing that we will attract the right types of clients to our practice and kind of repel the wrong ones, right? So that we can do our best work and that we can serve the clients who need our help the most. Well, Jennifer, thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for, you know, filling in our listeners about kind of how you did it and how you've made private practice work for you. If anyone who's listening would like to, you know, maybe follow you on social media or check out a website or anything like that, is there any place that people could follow you?
Let's see. Iceberg Therapy is on Facebook and Instagram, and you can find my website as well. And I'm happy to answer any questions or help anyone else out there in similar shoes that, you know, wants to reach out.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Isn't Jennifer great? I love how she shared about how and why she started her private practice, and specifically how it's allowed her to have a flexible schedule and be in full control of her environment, which has improved the quality of her life. She is a perfect example of someone who wasn't able to thrive in traditional SLP settings and therefore decided to create her own setting through starting her own private practice. If you would like to learn more about our programs and how we help support SLPs and OTs who want our help to start and grow their private practices, just like we help Jennifer, please visit independentclinician.com. As always, thank you for listening, and please tune in next week for another episode of the Private Practice Success Stories podcast. Till then.
Well, this episode might be over, but we don't have to say goodbye. Head on over to independentclinician.com for resources that will help you at each stage of your private practice journey. If you're on Instagram, let's connect. Follow me and send me a DM. I'm at Independent Clinician. And if you're on Facebook, make sure that you join the SLP and OT Private Practice Beginners Facebook group. All right, off to help more regular SLPs and OTs become successful private practitioners. Let me know if I can help you too.